Welcome to Packet Pushers, the greatest data networking podcast that's happened yet to the industry. Today's another sponsored podcast with one of our most favorite companies, Kentek. And joining us again is Avi Friedman. Welcome again to the show, Avi.
Thank you. Welcome. And great to talk to the viewers out in network nerd land again.
Now, what we like about you is you are actually a founder of a business who's actually a nerd. So let's kick off the show, because a lot of people don't understand what Kentek is. And as we just talked about in the prep for the show, is not everybody has a clear vision. So let's get the elevator pitch around what Kentek does again before we leap off into the discussion about what's been changing in the Kentek superstructure and the super and the world that Kentek lives in.
Sure. So I am CEO and one of the founders of Kentek. We do what we call network traffic intelligence. Our religion is that looking at the actual bits and bytes and packets can tell you a lot about the network layer, the application layer, and even the business. So we take NetFlow, SFlow, IPFix, PCAP to what we, flow. We take SNMP, we take routing data and put it all together to look at availability, performance, traffic engineering, and again, both for the operators in the NetOps and DevOps and SecOps, and also a little bit for the business. So our religion is the truth is in the traffic, and we have a SaaS platform that people send us the traffic, and we help them run their business.
And because you're storing all that in the cloud, you've got this massive engine that can do stuff that we just can't do or haven't been able to do historically on-prem. And it's this idea of sort of machine learning, artificial intelligence sort of thing where you're extracting value from the data that you get.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are server huggers. So our cloud is, we roll it the old-fashioned way in Equinix data centers with machines. And we have customers sending us, 4,000 flow records a second, more. It's trillions of flow records, each of which, has all the standard stuff and hopefully even latency loss, jitter, application, stuff like that. So how do you deal with it? It's not something you fire up on a VM. And that's been the challenge with a lot of the open source stuff is it hasn't scaled out, doesn't support clustering. And there's even some benefit that you can get when you see the whole internet worth of traffic in terms of showing people, is this happening just to you or happening to other folks? And we have a few hundred customers, 95% of them are on our public cloud SaaS offering. And then we also do on-prem and even single-tenant SaaS, because sometimes the security we need to come in and go, thou shalt not. And of course, GDPR and things like that. So people really want it on their own. It's fine. It's just it's a big data thing. So it requires a big stack to stand up.
I don't think setting up big data on-prem is actually very practical. You need many machines, and once the processing is actually happening, you might need twice as many machines, scale up, scale down, whereas you're sharing the load across, multiple customers, and you don't thrash all the customers at the same time. So it does make sense in that time. But your infrastructure itself is cloud-like. We were chatting again about, containers and storage systems and stuff like that you've been building. You actually have a cloud that you've just built on bare metal.
Yeah, exactly. It's stateless, netbooting, Docker. We have our own orchestration. It's all ZFS with persistent storage, which is one, again, separate podcast, issues in storage with containers. But to the end user, it's just, they log into a portal. There's an anomaly detection system. There's APIs. They use it, however. And, to our valued customers out there who insist on on-prem, we love you. But even though it's slightly lower margin for us, we prefer to have everyone, on our public cloud. As you mentioned, it's just more efficient, and we're trying to fight with efficiency against the tyranny of Java and the anti-greening of the world.
So let's talk a little bit about how networking architectures are changing. So, and how network monitoring is being used to adopt new networking architectures. You're seeing some changes in the industry about, people are moving away from the old ways of doing things to new things. So let's see, what is it that you're seeing out there now, and how is Kentek handling that?
I would say the single biggest thing that we see is the rise of the importance of the internet into pretty much everybody doing networking. When we started, we were dealing with web companies, service providers. Obviously, the service providers, they grew up around the internet. The web companies have had anycasted architectures without a backbone for a long time, so they didn't really need SD-WAN. They were doing it. But even the classic enterprise, you've got public cloud, which is another big thing that we see. You've got Twilio, Google, all the API partners they need to get to. You've got the users connected. You've got the, and they are doing SD-WAN. So it's really a lot of people's systems understand their network, but not the internet. Without that,
so this is this point that I've been banging on with for a few months now, probably most of 2017, which is that the internet has become the WAN. It's a public WAN, but we call it the internet. And the trick here is that once it's on a public WAN, you've got no visibility because the nodes in the network aren't available to you to gather data from. You lose your points of control in that sense.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit of a scary thing because you have to depend on it, but as you said, it's out of your control. So you can, it's a common resource, and sometimes you walk into a beautiful hotel and there's a bathroom and you get the beautiful towels and everyone gets to use it and it's awesome. And sometimes you come in off the ocean and you get that bathroom. How do you get the control, and how do you, because ultimately your job is the same, right? Which is users expect everything to just work. So that's one big area that we see. And the other is pretty much everyone, even the old server huggers, are doing at least some public cloud. Then either you've got to build your own network architecture to that, direct connect, colo, either remote connect it via, somehow, or you're, again, using the internet. And a lot of people wind up using the cloud provider's internet and not knowing when there's an issue. Is it a local problem? Is it a remote? And the cloud is one of those things which is it's like the internet. You depend on it. Your vendor tells you it's all okay. And it's ironic, for network people to talk to a vendor and it's like, oh, no, it's not a network problem.
Let me just trigger into this. We've talked a lot to companies that are doing visibility. So what they're doing is peeking inside the packets and building up models of what's happening in the network. And they're being able to say to customers, I can see, latency brownouts and things like that. What's the sort of features that Kentik brings to customers? Let's take it in context of we have traffic flowing over the internet. We're sending a whole bunch of data off to you. What are you going to tell me about extract from that? What value are you going to extract from that data and tell me I'm going to see? What am I going to see visibility-wise? What am I going to see past visibility?
Sure. So what we do is taking the flow data as enriched as we can, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have NetFlow V5, we'll take that. A lot of people are very religious and say, oh, you have to have sensors everywhere and all that, but we just find that's not very practical. And of course, with NetFlow E5, you don't get MAC addresses, you don't get VLAN, you don't get IPv6, the stuff you don't get, but you can still take that plus BGP and see even things like congestion in aggregate if you're doing enough traffic. All the way up to if someone, we have customers in ad tech or, even in the classic enterprise, they'll put an agent on a server, bake it into the AMI, bake it into their container hosting instance, which will take PCAP and then generate flow with performance data and also runs on a sensor. So you have some sort of source of what's the traffic, and you unify it with the routing data, and all of a sudden you can see places in the internetwork or the local network where you have congestion, you have performance problems. The other thing we do is we're trying to look not just at the network latency, but the application latency. We see many, many, many companies that actually, the network group actually wants the application group to understand if there's a network problem and vice versa, but the tools have been just completely different. Like no one has logins for anything. And it's all, people running around in circles. So it's how do you show the application people and the network people? And it's pretty easy, right? If you take a look at the application latency across everything, and it goes up across all areas of network, right? Your internal network, your WAN if you have it, all internet networks, then it's a network problem. If it goes up to everywhere, then it's an application problem. If it goes up to specific networks, then you can see, that it's a network issue. So it's taking the path data, taking the traffic, and putting them together.
Right. And so what you're giving me there isn't so much detailed deep packet inspection functionality. What you're saying to me is I can see across a spectrum of IP addresses on the internet, I can start to get visibility into application brownouts, application performance, because I'm seeing the flow data. And from there, I can start to look at TCP pacing and stuff like that. It's like you're really crunching vast amounts of data to get that visibility.
Yeah, I'll talk about our ingest in a minute because it's actually pretty fascinating. Routing tables for business data. I'll just leave you with that tease. what we do is not DPI in the sense of keeping and storing all the packets. We integrate with people that have sensors and do keep all the packets, and we're not You know, even keeping all the headers in sequence with nanosecond timestamps. But when you get flow data that has, you know, I mean, it was designed into IPFIX, right? You can have URL, you can have DNS query. We have a lot of customers doing DNS monitoring, both for performance and security and to see what site someone's going to, you know, on a flow. Then you do pull some of that DPI data out. You're just not debugging, you know, why is the TCP session, you know, getting into resets, but you can see that there was a reset and how it terminated and things like that. And generally, even just keeping samples, as I said, we're dealing with trillions of data points because we don't really want to copy all the traffic onto a big data platform. There's certainly people that do that, but normally for security and normally, you know, more in the government world. So it's DPI aware, but it's not primarily a DPI system.
Avi, you just mentioned trillions of data points. So is that just from in the context of a single customer and what you can infer there? Or because it's a SaaS solution, you're bringing in data points from lots of customers, do you also have an aggregate data set that can demonstrate to customers problems that may be common across however many customers you've got?
Sure. So let me do two pieces of math, one piece of math. So 4,000 flows per second is about what we see our average, you know, service provider or more than large enterprise customer do. And if they have a couple hundred devices, that is actually tens of trillions of data points for typically 90 days we store it at per customer. Yep. So we're actually getting into a truly stupid amount of data. When I do the tour of the backend, we have these Linux machines that have order of magnitude, a billion inodes on them, you know, for the column store that we do. So it's a lot of data. But to answer your business question, not yet. We don't yet show the global visibility. We use that as part of our anomaly detection for attacks, where we actually do look at it and say, if this is something happening to everybody, then it's not, you know, it's at a medium level of traffic, then we just sort of ignore it. That's coming in Q1 that people will actually be able to see. Is this something happening just to me or to everybody? So we have to be careful about that because a lot of our customers opt out or don't opt in. And so we can't use their data for anything unless customers are willing to be part of that visibility.
Oh, people are so fussy with their data.
Yes. Well, you know, IP addresses are PII, right? I mean, you know, my apartment has an AS and
oh, sure. Yeah.
You can tell whether I'm home or not, depending on whether you want to, you know, rob the place or do something else. So, but you know, and with GDPR coming out in the EU, there's a lot of sensitivity around that. So, you know, we have the option to mask off pieces of the IP address. It just becomes difficult when you've got /32s or, you know, 64s attacking you and you're not allowed to store that data. So that's a technology policy problem we're going to see a lot of over the next few years is privacy versus operations.
We've been talking about internet visibility. We've been talking about this all in the context of how network monitoring is being used. And historically, from my perspective, network monitoring has been a lot about reactivity. Ooh, I pulled a thing. Oop, something went bad. Oop, red icon. Ooh, I have to react to the red icon. But what you're describing is more forward-looking, trying to see trends and picking out things that can help you make forward-looking decisions about the network. And again, I think this has been in the context of internet so far. We've mentioned cloud. Can I also use that kind of data and analysis in your product for data center, for my own private stuff?
Yes, that's a big use case for us. Normally, we start by getting traffic data from the border of the network that touches the internet and other networks, because that's where people have, you know, had the weakest, you know, sort of solutions. And you see DDoS and that peering and optimization, you know, all on the internet side.
Well, there's money there at that edge. And so focusing on that edge it helps you monetize those connections better or be smarter about how you're interconnected to other networks.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, all your traffic that's flowing outside, that's, again, it's the area that's beyond your control. You know, you need to get visibility there first. And then data center, traditionally, I'd say our first couple of years since we started in 2014, it was just your own data center. Now it's your data center, but then also pretty much all the network teams we work with have some people or all people trying to bring in public cloud providers to that. So then how do you do that as well? And, you know, when you run your own data center, some of the biggest area of challenge has been you've got this magic orchestrating, you know, robots that put stuff all over the place without context about who actually talks to who. And you'd be maybe you wouldn't be surprised. Almost no, everyone knows, okay, I'm going to specify everything, but no one actually knows, you know, in advance what's going to talk to what. So debugging that when you have your own data center and saying, you know, we're seeing these applications, or even sometimes these applications are no longer talking to each other, which is part of that, you know, reacting on the intent side, which is what did we just break with this config push?
Well, you mentioned magic orchestrating robots basically doing things ignorantly because they don't have context about where it might make sense to put certain apps. So I'm assuming you're talking about a multi-tiered app or maybe, oh gosh, buzzword, microservices app that's been spread out across a bunch of different cloud platforms. And all of a sudden, the authentication module is in one cloud and the piece doing the authenticating is in a different cloud, and the latency is so atrocious that it impacts user experience. That kind of stuff or other things too?
Well, actually, we start even more basic, right? Which is you are using NSX or using Contrail or using, you know, any kind of automated orchestration stuff where you're deploying Docker containers or you're deploying VMs or you're deploying machines across your data centers just on your infrastructure. We'll ignore for the fact whether you use the internet to get between your data centers and just say, even within a data center, you get hotspots and congestion because if the applications and the microservices are placed without context, you've got things that are sucking massive volumes of logs and causing congestion up through the core. You know, even with just standard Claus architecture in a data center. So from that to, oh my God, now we have the internet in the middle or our WAN and however we get to the public cloud. So from just traffic causing latency to actually, you know, other networks and other people's traffic causing latency all the way. It's really become, for us, we started really internal data centers, but now it really is, ooh, the hybrid cloud. So, you know, most of our customers still don't call their own data centers private clouds. They call them, you know, computers and data centers and, you know, stuff. But their bosses call them private clouds. So.
Right.
Private, because it's very important they have a pet cloud and that they can, I guess you can't see your pet cloud, but you can talk about it. So both of those things, traffic causing congestion the old fashioned way to by just, you know, I make a lot of traffic and there's congestion to the complexity of internetworking, so the internet now involved in your applications, both of those things.
Okay, so I can use Kentik to analyze private data as well, which I assumed. So we've got another use case there for finding congestion points and determining latency in apps and helping me to optimize the application as it gets deployed. And because everybody in the world has got security use cases for their product and security seems to get funded by everybody and so on, is there also a Kentik security use case?
Why, yes.
Surprise!
Some people use us primarily for security, although that's not, you know, we deal with more network security groups than CISO groups. We don't go in and say we will stop all the bad stuff everywhere, you know, as you sort of have to get into the security club of people that go to Black Hat and, you know, and RSA and all that. But we started actually, you know, probably number one or number two use case was and still is around DDoS. Now, we are operators, so we look at DDoS and think of it more as a availability problem. Use this analogy on this podcast before, but the clean version of it, right? If I kidnap you, that doesn't necessarily involve picking your pockets, but kidnapping you might make it easier to pick your pockets, you know, and then get into your account. So, but in a lot of companies, DDoS, it's a kind of attack. People, you think of that as security, but actually it was, you know, Kentik broadly is on a mission to rip out all the appliances to do analytics and put it on one platform. And it was actually the forensics applications that I first got asked to help with, but not the operational side, because I'd been selling network sensors and that's what that's what they get used for. So underneath in our platform, we're not just analyzing it. We actually keep all that data, all that beautiful copies of all your traffic data. And that means that the whole thing that you want to look at, you can always double click and go. So
this is drilling down. This is where you talk about your drilling down. Because you've got all the data, I can click on a flow and start, well, not a flow, but I can click on an event or a trigger or a time period, and you've got it all there for 90 days at least.
Yeah, and it's really configurable based on how much people want to keep. And what that means is now when you have an event come in and you want to see what the history of that is from a security perspective, right, you can, with all the data is there. And for performance and application operations, sometimes you want it as well. But from a security perspective, they get more into that. Some of them actually want to do unsampled traffic, which we support. We've also integrated threat feeds so that we take IP reputation, lists of botnet IPs, and again, it's a mix of security and operations. The security folks want to know more on the endpoint. You know, of course, if we have MAC addresses, you can see printers talking to China and things like that. But even in a data center, you know, you let people self-service, they'll do the strangest things with their, you know, infrastructure. And all of a sudden, you have applications that are Bitcoin mining and you're having problems. So, you know, maybe you want to know if you've got things talking to botnets or crypto or stuff like that. So,
well, this is the old exfiltrate. What's leaking out of your network is actually more important than what's coming in sometimes.
You know, absolutely.
And this is the thing. I think one of the other aspects I wanted to draw out was this ability to build dashboards. So in Kentik, what you can do is once you say, I want to see my internet connection, but what I want to see is this, how much HTTP, how much, you know, different types of traffic is coming in. I can actually build those dashboards to my heart's content. I could spend 40 hours a week doing dashboard design and things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Most of our customers don't, but we even let you build dashboards of dashboards.
So this is actually really cool. Avi, I was in the room at the last Tech Field Day that you guys were at, and you showed off some of these. So folks, if you've heard dashboards and single panes of glass and are going, yeah, whatever, what you can actually build with Kentik is very interesting and very, very customizable if you're willing to mine the details of the data that's there. So sorry, Avi, I'm just trying to set you up because it really was interesting stuff.
No, it's no problem. We call them SPOFs and SPOGs, two separate things. We have single points of failures, which we try to avoid, and single panes of glass, which we try to build for people. So, you know, the product comes with a number of dashboards enabled, and actually, we're not digging in this conversation all the way down to the deep nerd stuff, but there's a column store database and a streaming database in back, and you can create custom columns for anything that you want. So for some of this pre-built, we try to make sure that everyone uses the same column for customer ID and for customer revenue and site and application name and Docker container so that the pre-built ones you can just use. But you can both build any number of dashboards that you want for yourself across the company, and then there's presets. And soon you'll be able to build hierarchies of them to sort of organize better. But the other big difference from a lot of systems you look at is in any dashboard, as soon as you click and want to look at something, you're in what we call the Data Explorer, which then lets you add, filter, or do anything. There's no roll-ups in Kentik. So every dashboard you're looking at is all the answers are, you know, derived in real time up from the data points that we have.
So tell me some customer stories around this. So when we talk about this insights and visibility question, have you got some customers that are doing particular stories in the, you know, that you, you know, no names, no pack drill? Yeah. But, you know, what are they doing and what are they, you know, give me some juicy tidbits about what they're discovering.
We have two kinds of things that we enable for discovery. One of them is around anomaly detection, around attack, volumetric attacks, performance, and even just traffic patterns. And the other is sort of dashboarding and digging in and drilling down. To do both of those, what you do is you start by actually, the most interesting use cases start with annotating the flow with what that means to you. Do you know what your flow means to you, Greg?
I think increasingly people don't. So if you've got one internet connection from one provider, it's really easy to know because everything's coming from one place and you can actually probably do the modeling yourself. But increasingly enterprises are going to have multiple BGP sessions with providers because you're not going to be dealing with just one because you're going to get rid of your MPLS. You know, your dual-homed MPLS connections, that's going to be ditched and replaced with internet. And you can't take everything from a single provider. And I don't think people have thought about it in that point of view in the enterprise, at least.
No, and it goes even beyond that. So, you know, people are tired of looking at IP addresses and having to go to a separate system and figure out what it means. So it's you know, part of DevOps and orchestration and CMDB, even in the old sense, is you know, as part of setting up someone on Kentik, it'll work. You just fire off flow and BGP and it'll do its thing. But what we really want is to understand what's the customer, if you're serving the outside, what's the user, if you have Active Directory. For customers, a lot of our web companies, customers program in both what the customer's total revenue is and how much revenue they pay the business. And I'll tell you a story in a second that'll make it clear why that's interesting. I talked about threat feeds. A lot of companies have their own reputation and intelligence, site, Docker container ID. So we really try to get more than just the IP address, port, and protocol that you think of in a Flow tool. And that's our biggest sort of marketing battle, is they're like, oh, you can't do that with NetFlow. Or they think NetFlow doesn't have things like performance and availability. So all those things become routing tables. I promised you routing tables of business data. So when we get the flow, as it comes in, we look up live from, it could be BGP community, IP address, any combination of those things. Who's the customer? What's the application? And throw that on as additional columns. So use cases are, we have ad tech companies, and AppNexus is actually referenceable for this in New York. They do a large amount, like service provider level, impressive traffic, because people run ad exchanges, are talking to hundreds of or thousands or tens of thousands of different ASs. So they're actually looking at performance problems from the anomaly detection system, but severity is graded by how much revenue is impacted, right? So not I wake you up because something went blip in the night, but is this something that is actually going to impact enough revenue that it is a business impacting problem?
So what metadata are they pulling in to get a cost metric?
So the cost or the cost or revenue metric is internal systems. So we have APIs, so you can just bulk populate live. Live as in, I fired up a Docker container, I shut it down so that when we get the IP address, we know what Docker container it is, or customer, right? So, everybody hopefully has a database. If you're serving, if you're an ad tech company, you've got ACLs anyway, right? You're not letting anyone talk to it. You've got credentials. So when someone starts using an API, you build up a table of who those users are. For carriers, we do some of the heavy lifting. We'll take DHCP logs and build basically a routing table of what users on what IP address and then stamp that in on the way in. So it's how do you look at data that you can get? If you have a system which is static, like you have communities for every customer or says that it is a customer, all those things we can take. But most service providers, they'll know what IP addresses. I mean, it could be a routing registry database. It could be the configuration database from which they push. Because most people have RPF, by prefix nowadays on the edge, hopefully, for those good citizens that are filtering source addresses. And whatever the system is, we try to connect it. There have been some companies that try to, go on site and do deep professional services, but we haven't had to. Normally, our customers can, we'll give them Perl, Python, PHP, Go, whatever, and just they hook it up to their internal systems to our API.
So that is interesting because it's not just that you can pull in the metadata, but it's that you can program the logic in. Because if you know what that metadata means, you can then manipulate the system or have Kentik give you back data that helps you understand the bottom line business impact, as opposed to a system that just does math and gives you trends and graphs that it's up to you to interpret what the heck it means. Getting an answer back or getting an analysis of your data that tells you what that means to your business is doing something useful with the data. I am just weary years upon years of looking at RRD graphs that are like, okay, do I care about this? And if you've stared at the graphs for a year, maybe you do know because you can kind of, as a human being, detect what's out of the ordinary and you've set your thresholds up correctly to flag you. But that's not a business impact. That's an operator view, a system impact that doesn't, it's not proactive, it doesn't give you trending, it doesn't tell you how critical something is unless you just happen to have been around enough and know. So if you've got a system that you can tailor to give you that in-depth business impact analysis, it's not just good for the senior people, it's good for everybody up and down the line that is monitoring that infrastructure.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we've always tried to avoid the world that of the SIMs and the security world, the machines that go Bing, that is something wrong? Yes, something's always wrong, and then you're just triaging. And so we've been a little bit better about that in the straight network community, but then you still wind up getting things, and it's really just being respectful of your time, right? Why should you have to get, see something and then go to another system and then figure out whether it's actually something that, what's impacted by that? So it's tying it all together and then trying to make it more actionable. As I said, alerting at the right level. there, you know, everything that's interesting, you probably want to send somewhere, you know, to your data swamp to be able to go back and find trends on top of that. But in terms of actually being woken up to go deal with something, because every change you make to the infrastructure risks, you know, other problems, especially, you know, if someone's groggy and you're not a large org where you've got the sharp people, you know, awake 24/7. Yeah, the context. And so if this is impacting a certain amount of revenue or applications that we think are particularly important, then everyone might need to be all hands on deck. But if it's, well, you know, it's unfortunate that there's 100 users in South Africa that are having problems getting to us, maybe we should, you know, bitch at our CDN about that using the data that we have, but, you know, not make it an all hands thing at 2 a.m.
I couldn't let go data swamp. That was just priceless. Everybody's got a data lake, you know, and it's all important. And now it's a data swamp. And it is a data swamp unless you're doing something useful with that info.
Exactly. Exactly. And you get blobs of them floating around and gaseous emissions from it. And you know, and actually interesting. So for people that run, we sort of call it prod, the production network for applications, right? So it's enterprise, web companies, people like that. They look at it as the customer of that application. For a lot of service providers, they look at this and the network people can be heroes by actually helping to optimize revenue for the company. We have some data center companies who program in all the customers, so they know performance by customer and can do similarly. Not that all customers are not important. You know, everyone loves all their customers, but sometimes you need to know.
Or sometimes we love one customer more than others.
Exactly. Some customers are more equal than other customers.
That's right, yeah.
But also interesting traffic pattern things that you can do that are more business oriented, like which of my large customers are starting to use AWS? Maybe I should talk to them and find out what they're doing and make them aware that we have cloud offerings. Or which companies, and we don't yet have this in the product, it's coming as a feed that we can, you know, populate for people, but we have three different customers that have actually on their own looked at an AS to revenue mapping. And when they fire up customers, they actually look at small for them customers that are large in revenue and then use that to go out to prioritize customer success and going out to talk to them and saying, hey, what are you doing over there? Maybe, and again, sort of more educational. And then we have the thing, which is considered unseemly in some departments, but people that grew up as the internet grew up know that network engineering and social engineering and business engineering can often be converged in peering and transit discussions. So you actually look at your own traffic if you're a service provider and say, who am I sending traffic to for free, right? Because it's a peer that could be a profitable customer for me, right? Downstream of that peer, maybe I should go try to sell them something. So it's, again, it's a little bit of business engineering. So there's still, how do you make that useful to the sales side of the house? We came up with something internally. I think we call it guided dashboards, but internally we called it boss dashboards, which is the, you know, which customers can I steal from competitors question, and then by market, and then you just select a market and it tells you the customers to go look at, you know, because a lot of the deep nerding is lost on people who don't know what prefixes and PAS are. So a lot of our work next year, first half of next year, is how do we make people that know applications but not network, right? Because the network is magic, right? You just API and it all works.
Yeah, that's right. It just works. You just plug stuff in and then mystically it works.
Yes, exactly.
So that's how it's worked for 30 years.
That's right. We sucked the graybeards, you know, out into APIs. So more graybeards needed. So how do you get the application people, the people on the sales side, or, you know, how much does a customer cost me if I'm a service provider, or, you know, on the IT side for running applications, how much of the business is impacted? You know, what kind of application is this? And people really want this all to be integrated. And, you know, I was at Akamai, you know, in the bubble, joined before the IPO in 99. People were throwing hundreds of millions of dollars at anyone. And one startup could solve, you know, the entire problem back then in theory. Right now, you really do need multiple systems, right? Yeah. And so they need to be tied together. We just get a little bit activist about that, you know, both in terms of taking the business data and, you know, having your Grafana plugin and trying to work with other, you know, other systems. Even on the internet side, you know, we take a more passive approach, but there's people that do a more active synthetic what if. Our customers are driving us to work with them, and that's something that we're looking at too, because one approach often doesn't give you the 360-degree visibility. We still believe religiously, though, that starting with your actual traffic is the best place, because a lot of the what-if tools can tell you, well, there might be a problem in South Africa, but if you don't actually have any users there, does it matter? Getting back to prioritizing, what you look at.
But again, what I want to do is just come back to basics here. What you're doing is taking flow data or PCAPs where it's necessary, putting it into the cloud, and then you're doing analysis on the data that's there. And you're able to see into the packet flow, or you're using BGP lookups or autonomous system. In the case of, you're actually able to drill down and say, per provider, I'm seeing this traffic performance. So if you wanted to troubleshoot, people saying, I've got a problem running to Azure, you can now start to track the flows of that session going to Azure and saying, I can see that there's a brownout, there's some sort of performance loop. But then you could take it a step further and say, if I'm an enterprise and I've got provider A and provider B, because I've got two providers, but I'm currently sending all of my Azure traffic out through provider A, I could say, yeah, it's definitely a problem with provider A. I should switch my Azure traffic in the routing tables over to provider B and it should fix it.
Absolutely. We even have a customer that does that automatically. Mm-hmm. They look at Kintiq and see where are they having performance problems to, and then change the routing based on that. That's, again, the production side of the user happiness for their core application. So that becomes critical. And on the enterprise side, it's not just provider. It's even, again, if we tie into their orchestration system, it's even understanding which availability zone or data center, or cloud instance in GCE, Azure, Oracle, AWS, whoever, and which application, and even which user. So you can say, is it a problem for this application over there? Is it a problem for everything in Azure, which might be a global, network problem there? Or is it just a data center? Maybe I should move the traffic even within a single cloud, because it's much easier to move traffic around within a single cloud. Typically, when you have a piece of an application, you tie it to that infrastructure and it starts growing its tendrils. So you're using their...
Yeah, troubleshooting public cloud gets pretty nasty pretty quickly, because you never actually know where the bottleneck is, whether it's the public cloud itself or where it is, or whether it's their bandwidth or your bandwidth. And it gets very difficult to get visibility into that. But the first step is to know that there's some sort of brownout actually happening, or some sort of resource exhaustion happening somewhere. And this is where tools like Kintiq come into the mix, because it's capturing usually at a perimeter point. So you're saying, at least going through this point here, I'm seeing this data. I know that this is where the trick is. So now that I can separate that into two halves, I know at least I can start my binary troubleshooting by saying it's on one side or the other side.
Yeah, exactly. And it can be perimeter or can be all the way in which case you see intra-zone issues. Now, whether they'll fix them for you or not is a separate question of actually managing how you manage cloud infrastructure that's not yours, separate podcast topic. Because again, the network people wind up being in the world of being told by other network people, there is no problem.
The reason I raise that point is, that we've heard things like Netflix, where at different times in their historical cycle, they used to do things where they'd instantiate a VM and then test it to see if it was actually on an unloaded server, to see if it was performant. And if it wasn't, they'd shut it down and then start another one until they got ones that were actually not on congested physical infrastructure.
Well, they still do that. And they still do that. I mean, assassination is your number one tool of optimization in cloud, which is, you just keep binary searching, you keep firing stuff up. And then it can be simple stuff that you don't need Kintiq for, like just looking at retransmits and errors on the interface or seeing, issues to everywhere. But I have a lot of people that use Kintiq to kill things. They see a problem that's just clearly local and they'll just go, okay, fire that instance.
Yeah. But it could not just be the VM itself. It can also be the bandwidth in and out of the cloud. Maybe if you're on AWS or Google, or Azure, that's less of an issue because in theory, they've got so much of it. That's not actually true. My experience of them is that sometimes those data centers are getting close to maximum and the new one hasn't quite come online yet. Mm-hmm. And, that sort of thing. But there's also a second tier of cloud providers, people like OVH and all of those companies who are trying to, the colo companies that we used to all, believe to be the leaders in the industry until the other companies, the FANGs came along. And now all of a sudden we're seeing those people actually often aren't as well put together as those bigger clouds who are focused much more on that game. If you're coming from a colo, you may not be used to the idea of high performance, high reliability, and you may be holding onto a bunch of 10-year-old, 20-year-old legacy stuff. And I think it's much more important in those environments.
Yeah, and we have a lot of customers that are colo providers, dedicated hosting providers providing cloud. They're actually trying to get out ahead of it. And again, topic for a separate podcast is how can you do network design so you don't just have these magic networks in the sky that get congested for someone or everyone or fail like software. There's actually something to be said for failing like the way network protocols and things like that failed, and you know, just having your whole data center die. Because in fact, it's not just a network thing. The way that a lot of modern, you know, people trying to do the Giphy thing actually wind up having their storage die, their computers die, not just the network die, especially if you have your own, you know, storage layer.
Yeah, I was listening to something today, and he was talking about Google does 2 billion RPC calls a second inside of its infrastructure. In, you know, doing 4,000 RPC calls a second would be regarded as an enormously large enterprise.
I guess, you know, I don't want to be a grumpy old man because I feel young and write code and, you know, move fast and whatever.
But you remain young and good looking, Avi. I'll testify to that.
As you for some definition of good looking.
That's right, yeah.
You know, I just say, if you want to write your own SDN controller like Google, I will believe you're qualified when you write a search engine like Google. You know, Google is a software company, par excellence. And, they can do a lot of things at a lot of different layers. But if you actually look at most storage outages in public clouds that roll their own, it's actually network problems that cause.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
You know, and again, it's not a Banjunos build. That is the, or iOS, you know, not to pick on any one vendor, you know, that's the issue there.
Avi, a lot of the use cases and companies and contexts we've been talking about are service providers or cloud providers, large-ish companies or companies that are directly interfacing the internet and deliver their content to their customers over the internet. What's the classic enterprise use case here for Kentik? I mean, I think I kind of know the answer in that we're pulling a lot of our content from the internet. But so is that it? Is that what maybe a mid-market or large enterprise would use Kentik for to help them with?
So the classic enterprise we've seen converging, so it's much closer to what we started with a lot of the web companies looking at in terms of use cases and architectures. So when we started 2014, it was still SD-WAN. People were sort of sniffing suspiciously at it and looking at it as a category and saying, okay, we could look at that. People had data centers. They're thinking about cloud. You know, the internet was this thing on the outside. But now we see much more convergence. So people are looking at the internet and beginning to understand that their users, their applications that they're building, and their use of public cloud is really dependent on that. They're changing their WAN architectures, as I think you guys have been seeing, to be very internet dependent. And in that world where you don't control the WAN, it isn't MPLS, understanding the usage patterns there and where there are problems and actually taking control of your destiny is something that we've seen the classic enterprise doing much more than before. In terms of, you know, I was suspicious when we started about how much internal application development people would get into, because you think of an SAP and all the Oracle applications and all that. But we've seen the trend towards SaaS, which is, again, another, you know, now that's all out on the internet. And do you peer with them? You know, are there problems with Office 365 or Salesforce? That we've been seeing as another big use case. But also, we've seen a lot of internal application development, more than I thought we would. And in that world, then, they're trying to make the service platform. They're trying to deal with multi-cloud or their own data center. Everyone's into data center consolidation. Everyone's into migration to cloud. And then, of course, that involves the network supporting that. So I really thought that we'd be getting into financial, retail, hospitality, healthcare, you know, oil and natural gas and resource exploration a little bit later, because there's a whole ton of appliances there that need replacing. But starting earlier this year, we saw a big wave of that. And surprisingly, a lot of the use cases are really the same. The big difference, I would say, is that people are a little bit more in the classic enterprise used to looking at things certain ways. So instead of maybe starting with dashboards that are looking at the internet health, they actually want to see application performance KPIs, right? Service health. I've got a service which is all the purchasing stuff in my enterprise. So they organize it differently because they've got a whole different methodology for looking at infrastructure overall. And it's an interesting one. And so it's just a matter of tuning the dashboards and demos so that people see how modern approaches in monitoring can replace some of the classic things that they've been doing.
Well, you said you were a little bit surprised at how quickly some companies were adopting Kentik and doing something with your solution. Has that been inspirational, where you kind of have a roadmap and for big and cool things that are coming next?
Yes. For the first half of next year, we're putting a lot of effort into making the network insights understandable and usable by people that don't know anything about networking. Especially, I'd say there's a lot of cross-pollination growing in the classic enterprise, but there's still people that just, their view is networks are magic. They don't know the primitives of prefixes, right? So that IP addresses near each other are typically routed the same way and things like that. So it's exposing the insights to them and the alerting and in a way that says this application is the problem, and then a network person can get into why you can prove that on the network side, but the user doesn't need to understand that. Or this provider, Azure, or this, I'm not going to pick on any particular, I'll pick Net99, provider no longer exists. Net99 is the problem getting to Azure, you need to optimize around that. So that's a big thing that we've been evolving. Another one is more decodes. We talked about DPI a little bit, that's a little bit of a security term, but it's SQL queries, load balancer data. It's taking data from additional layers of the application infrastructure so that we can point even better to network problem or application problem and where. So we call that decodes, which is just as you look at the traffic, understanding more of those application semantics. And then the other thing is metrics. You mentioned RRD. Readers can raise their hand virtually if you have RRD-based solutions like Cacti, or even older like MRTG. I do still on my CEO lab infrastructure. So getting into the metrics and being able to, we do take SNMP data, but we don't try to be the authoritative only source of that. But we have a lot of customers, especially in the enterprise, that want us to do that. And then even people in the service provider world that want us to replace some of the, metrics store systems with a more big data approach. Mm-hmm. So those are the things we're really working on, in addition to just some of the cloud integration, so that some of the things.
Yeah, there's data sources in the clouds themselves.
Yeah,
that you
exactly.
can start to ingest. You don't necessarily have to just take, NetFlow, SFlow, IPFix, and so forth to get the data sets.
Yeah, ironically, it's not as much the VPC flow logs, say, from Amazon, which are 15-minute aggregates of counters. It's more like SNMP than like traffic flow.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So not only when I first started, and we're really hoping to be able to work with all the cloud providers to get more flow data without having to instrument the AMIs, have a appliance in front or something like that. Right now we work with Gigamon, who's just deployed a solution there, which is sort of instrumenting the hosts, the AMIs. But right now VPC flow logs, it's not just flow delayed 15 minutes. It's a hash table per the five tuple of protocol ports and IP addresses with byte and packet counter for the whole 5 to 15 minute window. So it gets really difficult to peer within that. But then you can take load balancer logs and turn that into flow, and that's the approach that we take there. So
yeah. So the public clouds really, my experience has been that they're fair way behind in terms of giving visibility to customers. In the general assumption being that most customers aren't interested in it. I think they're very customer driven. That is, if the customers don't use those features, they won't develop them.
I agree. The customers need to start asking for them and demanding them. We're working with some fairly large customers to do that, but and also with some people like Gigamon who aggregate, who are already working with customers that need visibility, not just for what Kentik does, but for security and operations and many other kinds of platforms.
Well, as we get to wrapping up this show, we're sort of getting to the time sort of thing. It's been good to talk to you, Avi. Any closing thoughts on what customers should be, like what people should be thinking about that Kentik particularly solves? Is there a particular use case or a particular customer story you could dig up?
Sure. I think as people go into the world of running infrastructure, but also depending on others, losing control of the entire stack, that's an area where Kentik's been able to be particularly helpful. You know, people think of it as Docker monitoring or performance monitoring or security monitoring, but whatever it is, getting a view of the routers and switches and data center and hypervisor infrastructure you control, and then the cloud side as well, and being able to point at, in this world of complexity, who has the issue and what you need to do about it, that's something that we've been very successful with. Mm-hmm. And also on the dynamic lead provision side, you know, really having a platform so that everything that you turn on and off, you've got integrated instrumentation with.
That's a key one, is that dynamic provisioning. People just start turning on VMs inside of some public or private cloud, and it's automatically added to your system because you're seeing the traffic flows. You don't actually have to build an API call to add this new endpoint.
And as we train our customers, which we are going back through some of the people from 2014, 2015, but it's part of our onboarding process to really say, well, we want to know what this IP address means to you. It brings people into that so that they're actually putting that context in and making it so that everything flows through. So when they turn on an application or they turn on a POP with SD-WAN provider or whatever, it's all the context is there so that people aren't just getting alerts and saying, well, I've never seen that IP address before. What is that? What does this mean to me?
So just in closing, I want to call people's attention to the Kentipedia. I've been amusing myself. It's very funny. It's obviously, but it's a collection of articles, Wikipedia style, well-written articles, I might add, about technologies that are directly related to the Kentik product. So things like NetFlow tools, what's JFlows, what's IP fix, what is the idea behind a big data DDoS defense? So if you're actually sort of thinking here, why do I want to have Kentik to do my DDoS in the way that it does it, there's lots of like little articles there that I found quite useful. And you should be commended for that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It was a fun creation.
Yeah. So if you do have any questions around that, that one place to start is the Kentipedia part. The second one, of course, is to get a hold of Avi over at Kentik. Avi, where can they find you on the internet?
Kentik.com, Kentik.com. I tweet less than I did before because I've been I consume info, but I've been trying to spend less time on that. But I'm Avi Friedman there, avi@kentik.com, and happy to point you to either answer questions or point you to the right resources internally.
Thank you. And as always, thank you very much for listening to the Packet Pushers. Kentik has been sponsoring the Packet Pushers for quite some time, and we get a lot of good information from working with Avi. Definitely recommended. I understand that many of you may not be familiar with this mode of operation, and it does take a little bit of getting used to, I think. It's not the old SNMP polled visibility tooling. This is much more about inline data, but it's not even like your traditional, you know, device inline type stuff. So I do highly recommend that you get to grips with it. And as always, you can find this and many more fine free technical podcasts along with our community blog at packetpushers.net. Follow us on the Twitter as @packetpush. Find us on LinkedIn, like us on Facebook, and it would really help if you could rate us on Apple Podcasts. That's absolutely the best place for us to continue to bring you these fine free technical podcasts. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.